But first, over the course of 12 years, a group of security employees at the Navy's largest public shipyard amassed a stockpile of weapons and vehicles, ostensibly to protect the facility against terrorist attacks. But investigators say the entire enterprise amounted to an unauthorized police force and wasted at least $21 million. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu has the details.
The probe was conducted by the Naval Sea Systems Command's Inspector General in 2014, and it's never been publicly disclosed before. But one of the case's lead investigators says none of the shipyard supervisors who devised the enterprise has been held accountable, despite the fact that millions of dollars in government property is still missing to this day. Investigators say the case has its origins in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, when agencies had extra money to spend on security, and virtually no one was in the mood to question spending to protect federal facilities and employees. And so, the officials in charge of a group of unarmed security guards, whose job was supposed to be patrolling the internal work areas at Norfolk Naval Shipyard, started beefing up the workforce and outfitting it with clandestinely acquired firearms, boats, law enforcement badges, vehicles, complete with fictitious license plates, and an armored personnel carrier, which they emblazoned with the word police.
These folks are not law enforcement. Again, that's a key to consider. They wanted to be, and all of their actions were done to become a law enforcement organization.
That's Peter Lintner, the Deputy Director of Investigations at the NAV CIG's office.
The stunning thing was that seven commanding officers, not a single one of them, put a stop to this or really had any visibility on it. Everybody just thought, well, they're the security department. They're the good guys. They're not going to do anything wrong. And in actuality, they were doing everything wrong, and they knew they were doing the things wrong.
Lintner says the case originated from tips to an inspector general hotline. That audio comes from a briefing he delivered to a recent government-wide gathering of hotline officials organized by the Defense Department IG's office. NAVC declined to answer our questions about the case. But the investigation found that the establishment of the unauthorized law enforcement agency was wrong on its face because Navy regulations only allow one armed police force on any base. In this case, the Regional Navy Police Department. To let any other group of workers carry weapons and perform law enforcement duties takes special permission from the Chief of Naval Operations, permission that was never requested nor received. Nonetheless, the shipyard security specialists created their own on-base armory and stocked it with what Lintner says were illegally purchased Berettas, thousands of rounds of ammunition, high-powered rifle scopes, night vision goggles, and ballistic vests and helmets. To get a new fleet of vehicles, employees turned to a surplus property yard operated by the Defense Logistics Agency a few miles down the road. Procedures in place at the time allowed virtually any government employee to shop through a lot of used Suburbans, Humvees, and other vehicles and drive off with one after showing a letter of authorization from a supervisor and about 30 minutes of paperwork. In that way, the security specialists allegedly obtained at least 92 vehicles and other equipment worth more than $4 million without any valid mission requirement, including a flatbed tractor trailer to move the vehicles from DLA to the shipyard. To this day, all those vehicles are unaccounted for, according to the IG's office. But the way in which the group procured those vehicles also presented a problem. That's because, according to Navy regulations, the service's government vehicles have to be acquired and registered through Naval Facilities and Engineering Command. NAVFAC refused to approve the ones the security specialists obtained through DLA's surplus lot and told them to send them back.
So, the security department said, roger that. They developed a license-making plant at the shipyard, and they manufactured their own license plates and put those on the vehicles. They also went to DRMO. License plates are supposed to be taken off of vehicles before they go to DRMO, but in a lot of times that doesn't happen. The plates are still there. So they went back to DRMO with a screwdriver, took all the plates off the vehicles, and we found cases of expired license plates in one of the warehouses they had, and they just interchanged the plates. Whenever they got a vehicle that was in working condition, they wanted to drive it, they slapped a plate on it, and off they went.
And that plan seems to have worked just fine, until several of the employees used one of the vehicles to travel to a course at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Georgia. Part of $66,000 in police training, the IG says, was totally unnecessary, given the employees' official positions as security specialists.
And when they got to the gate at Fletsy, they were denied entrance because the plates weren't any good. They made their own plates. So their solution, they backed away from the gate, around the corner, took the top plate off, put one of the bottom plates on that was a valid government plate, I just slapped that on and drove it into Fletsy and continued to drive that vehicle.
Besides the ways in which the employees acquired their vehicles, the fact that they operated them on public roadways presented major liability concerns for the government. For instance, at times, the employees would turn on lights and sirens they had installed on the vehicles themselves to do traditional law enforcement duties, like helping at the scene of traffic accidents. And the fleet the security specialists amassed included not just Suburbans, Tahoes, and Humvees, but heavy-duty equipment whose operators are supposed to have special licenses, including at least two tractor trailers, a backhoe, and a large bus that the team outfitted with $233,000 in communications equipment for use as a mobile incident command center. It was never actually used for that purpose. The IG says not only were those vehicles not properly licensed, neither were their drivers. And needless to say, none of the unregistered vehicles were insured either. The employees appear to have gone out of their way to conceal the equipment they had amassed from installation officials who were responsible for doing property inventories and anyone else on the base. To keep the armored personnel carrier hidden, for instance, they set up plastic barriers and a hedge surrounded by concertina wire. Normally, they kept many of their vehicles inside an enormous warehouse on a remote edge of the compound. But when they found out the base's asset manager was scheduled to visit that warehouse to check to see what was inside, they worked quickly to temporarily empty it.
They drove all the vehicles out, loaded everything on a flatbed and took it to the local naval base, stashed it in one of the back parking lots, and when the asset manager got there, there was literally an empty warehouse when the day before it had been packed with tools, vehicles, all types of material. And they did that deliberately and admitted that they deliberately hid it because they were afraid if anybody found out what they had, it would be taken away from them. And that's what they said every time. If anybody found out what we had, they would have taken it away from us. And we wanted to make sure we were ready for any contingency. And their motto was, it's better to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it. And that's what they told us and why they did all this.
Lintner says the team's activities were enabled by virtually non-existent oversight. The shipyard's security director during most of the episode was given carte blanche to approve a budget that at one point reached $20 million, and he rarely questioned the workgroup's spending. But many of the investigators' most serious concerns happened between 2009 and 2013, when the base hired a new deputy security director. The IG's findings say that's the time frame in which most of the weapons purchases occurred, and the organization made several other highly questionable buys, including federal law enforcement badges costing several hundreds of dollars each and 1,000 challenge coins, which employees, quote, handed out like candy. Also in that period, the shipyard's labor costs started to skyrocket. In 2009, its payroll cost the Navy $2.6 million. That grew to $4.7 million by 2014.
Abuse of authority, preferential treatment, that's when the big hiring glut went up. They started hiring in 2012, but they weren't hiring security specialists. They were hiring friends from church, family friends, family members. We looked at the qualifications of the folks that they hired. None of them had a security specialist background. But he was hiring a lot of folks that had a law enforcement background. So a lot of auxiliary police officers, auxiliary sheriffs, those kind of folks, because he's trying to build up a police department. That's the kind of folks he hired. But unfortunately, the big difference between what security specialists do and what police do.
Overall, the IG estimates the enterprise spent $10.6 million on unjustifiable labor hours, made another $10.4 million on unnecessary law enforcement equipment. Thus far, none of that money, nor the missing vehicles and equipment, have been recovered. And Lintner says neither the U.S. Attorney nor the Naval Criminal Investigative Service have shown much of an interest in pursuing the case. NAVC did not respond to our questions about any actions the command has taken to improve oversight or any disciplinary action it's taken against workers who are still employed there, but Lintner says some of them received letters of reprimand.
The issue with this is most of the senior folks retired. We asked if we could go after those folks in retirement and have some impact on them, and we were told it's just too hard to do. The folks who did stay received letters of reprimand. There's no recoupment of money. Nobody's out searching for those vehicles that disappeared. That didn't happen. But I did discover that a lot of those folks who retired, they retired before they wanted to because they were afraid this was going to go to NCIS and it would be criminal charges. So they bailed. And then they tried to get back into the security world after they retired and discovered that the word had been put out that they weren't trustworthy and that they had this issue hanging over them. And none of them were able to get follow-up jobs in the security world, at least not that they know of. But there was no recruitment. Nobody went to jail. And you know, unfortunately, when everybody retires like that and they're out of government service, there wasn't much we could do.
Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.